the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Great, well, it's wonderful to be with you this morning. Just had a wonderful welcome. Wonderful lot of welcoming emails before I arrived, and then I met many people earlier on and over coffee. So thank you very, very much. And as Nick mentioned, I think this is the middle of a series of three talks looking at different aspects of relationship. And this morning we're going to be looking at the topic of marriage. Now, we're going to be looking at a Bible passage in a bit, so it might help you now if you just turn up Ephesians 5. That's on page 1111, so 1111, and we'll be coming to that in a bit. So if you just get that ready. Well, if you ask people on the street what they think is the secret of a happy marriage, many people will say communication, and I thought you might just enjoy this story to illustrate the point. But there was a man who had been doing his workout at the gym. He's just getting changed. Phone next door to him goes, he picks it up, and he says, "Hi." Woman on the other hand, on the other end, says, "Oh, hi, darling." And he says, "Oh, hi, how are you?" He says, "Great, just on my workout." She says, "Do you know, I've just been shopping, and I saw a really beautiful bag in the shops that I really love. It's just the right colour for me. Do you think I can buy it?" And he says, "Yes, darling, I love you. Of course you can have it." So she says, "Oh, thank you, darling." And then she says, just as I was going along, I saw another shop, and there was a really beautiful coat, and it just matched the bag. They'd go really well together. So I just wondered, do you think I could have that as well? And he said, "Darling, I love you. Of course you can have it. Anything you want." And she said, "Oh, thank you. I love you." And he said, "I love you too." And then she said, "And actually, just one more thing. When I was on the way home, I passed a mini garage, and there was one of those new sports minis there in the forecourt, and I know we were thinking about getting a new car, so I just wondered, could I have that as well? Could we get it?" And he said, "Darling, because I love you so much, of course." And she said, "Oh, thank you, darling. Goodbye." And he said, "Goodbye." And he turned around, picked up the phone, and he said, "Anyone know whose phone this is?" Anyway, maybe communication they're not going quite so well. But I want to acknowledge this morning, in a gathering of this size, there's going to be people in all kinds of family situations. So some of you will be single, maybe engaged, some of you just starting out looking at relationships. Some of you will be maybe divorced, others will have known the pain of that or of widowhood. And there were some here this morning who will be married. And even amongst those who are married, there will be some of you for whom marriage is a good thing at the moment and it's going well. And there will be others for whom it's quite a tough time. And in our marriages, we all go through those different seasons. But if you're in a place and things are going well, my prayer is that God will give you something this morning that you can draw on in the tough times when they come. But also, if things are difficult at the moment, if you're going through quite a dry patch, my prayer is that God will give you something now that will just turn things around. In my experience, so often a marriage can be spiraling downwards, and it can just take one thing to click start that spiral back in the other upwards direction. So whatever your situation, our prayer is that God would give you something that will equip you and bless you in your relationships and in your families, whatever shape or size they may be. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen the film Juno. It's a story of a teenage girl who gets pregnant. She decides to keep the baby, and she decides to give the baby up for adoption. And she lives with her father and her stepmother. Her relationship with the father of the child is fragile, and the relationship of the couple who are going to adopt this baby isn't great either. So she doesn't really have any role models for healthy relationships. And we come in the film to a really moving scene when she has a conversation with her father. And she asks a profound question, and one that is of immense importance. It's a question that I think every single one of us ask or will ask in the future. And the question is this. She says, "I guess I wonder sometimes if people ever stay together for good." She needs to know, is it possible to stay together forever? And it's a question that I think is on each one of our hearts, because we are made in God's image. Relationship is at the heart of the Trinity. God has designed us for intimate relationship. There's a longing in each one of us to know and to be known by others. I think that's why 85% of young people aspire to marry. But the question is, we have that longing, but is it possible? Is it possible for us to stay together forever? Society doesn't give us much encouragement to believe that it's possible. And I think it's a question we ask because we know that it is difficult. And that's for a number of reasons. Firstly, many of us are growing up with few role models of what a committed, healthy relationship looks like. Secondly, the statistics don't make very encouraging reading. So the UK has one of the highest divorce rates in Europe. Fewer people are choosing to marry. In fact, marriage rates are at the lowest since records began. And then thirdly, we live in a consumer society. So our daughter's mobile phone broke recently. We went along to Car Phone Warehouse to have it looked at, and they said, don't bother to get it fixed. It's cheaper just to buy a new one. That thinking has crept into our relationships. If our relationships aren't working, if they're difficult, society says to us, don't bother working at it. Go and just trade it in for a different model. Now, I used to be a family law solicitor, and I saw firsthand then so many people whose dreams had really not worked out and who had things had not worked out the way that they had planned. They'd started out thinking, this is forever, but then they found themselves sitting opposite my desk and discussing how they were going to divide the things that they had built up over the years. And I remember one woman who came in to see me in particular. She had a toddler in a buggy. She had her head down. And I remember her because she was very different from many of the other people that used to come in. Most people would come in with a sheet of paper with reasons on it that they wanted to talk through, things they wanted to say and explain. But she didn't say anything. She just reached into her bag, and out of the bottom of her bag, she produced a crumpled photograph. And on that photograph was a picture of a bride and a groom smiling out at me. Somewhere between their oldest child's first tooth, the youngest child starting school, this couple had lost each other. A wall had grown up between them, and society said to them, it's too hard. It's too hard to scale that wall. It's too hard to take it down. Start again. Try a different model. And it's into all that chaos that Jesus speaks. He gives us a different way. He gives us a blueprint to build healthy marriages that last a lifetime. What he says is simple, and it is counterintuitive. It involves a new mindset. It's as if we have to reset our relational compass, reset north, simple, powerful, but the truth. And we're going to read what he says in Ephesians 5. If you want to just turn to that now, it's just the verses from verse 21 to 27. And he says this, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit to your husbands as you do to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he is the Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain, wrinkle, or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. So the starting point, verse 21, is mutual submission. Submit to each other out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Now, the detail about what those two roles look like is really the content for another talk. But I want to look at what this mutual submission looks like. God says to husbands and to wives, don't take your cue from society, but take it from me. Our model in marriage is Jesus's model of love for us. In marriage, we are called to love just as Christ loved us. And the shape of the marriage is the shape of the cross. It's that attitude of giving, of putting our spouse's needs before our own, of going to those same extraordinary lengths to give, to sacrificially give to our husband or wife in the way that Jesus gives to us. And in that way, enabling our husband or wife to become more the person that God intended them to be. Now, Paul describes what Jesus' love looks like in Philippians. If you just turn over a couple of pages to Philippians 2, that's on page 1114. This is what he's talking about when he says, starting at verse 3, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. In your relationships with one another, have the attitude of mind Christ Jesus had, who, being in very nature God, didn't consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a human being, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross." Jesus had every right to, but never did, use his position for his own sake. He chose to submit for you and for me, and we weren't even his equals. He had a choice. He could maintain his rights and forego having a relationship with humanity, or he could give up his own rights in order to have a relationship with us. He's modeled that for us, and he opted for relationship over his personal rights. And friends, that is the model that he calls us to in our marriages. Love is a choice. It's not a feeling. It's a verb. It's not a noun. In short, it is putting the other first. Now, when I was training to be a solicitor, I was involved in organising a smart dinner for the Trainee Law Society, Bristol Trainee Law Society. And I wrote to someone called Lord Denning to ask him if he could come and speak at this dinner. Now, many of you will have heard of Lord Denning, but if you haven't, he was a very important judge. He was the master of the rolls and made a lot of important decisions that are now enshrined in our legal system. But I had to look after him from the time he arrived, during the dinner, and the next morning. So did I drop everything to do that? Of course I did. When he told a joke in the evening that wasn't very funny, did I laugh? Of course I did. When he told a story and got some facts wrong, did I correct him and cut across him and criticise him and say, "No, you've got that wrong. It was 3 years, not 5 years. It was red, not blue," or whatever? No, of course not. When he kept me waiting, did I sigh and look at my watch and think, "Oh my goodness, you know, yet again"? No, because for those 2 days, he was the most important person and I needed to put his needs first. And the Bible says that's how we should treat our husband or wife every single day. Now, we might be tempted to say, isn't that being a bit of a doormat? Won't they take advantage of me? Well, they might, but that's not the point. If you think it's hard, try turning the question round and try asking, "How would I like to be loved?" And then I think that gives us some light on the situation. Now, that kind of love comes relatively easily. When we first meet, when we're head over heels in love, it comes naturally to respect and value each other, to put someone else's needs ahead of our own. And the longer we're together, the harder it can be. So it needs to be a choice that we make. So I'm going to look now at three practical examples about what this looks like in practice. And the first is putting the other first, is being interested in the things that they are interested in. So in Philippians, Paul says, "Don't look to your own interests, but to the interests of others." Now, I spend most of my time being interested in the things that I am interested in, and I guess you will do the same. We gravitate naturally to those things. So I'm interested in art, in relationships, in going out for coffee, in going out for walks. My husband Richard is interested in different things. He's interested in TV, in sport, in DIY, and in his business. And those are the things that we automatically gravitate to. Now, submitting our will, putting the other first, means discovering what the other person is interested in and joining in with that. So in the early days of our relationship, that probably becomes naturally. It's easy to develop a thing that someone else is interested in when you're very keen on them. So when we first started going out, I discovered Richard was very keen on cars, and he was building a kit car. And most Saturdays, I would find myself in this freezing cold scrapyard, clambering over bits of metal and finding these bits of equipment that he needed to build the car. And I hated the metal bits, I hated the smell of the oil, I hated the cold, but it was easy because I wanted to join with him and be with him. But it's a challenge now to keep being interested in those things. And I guess our situations will be the same. Now for us, this came to a head when our children were 0, 2, 4 and 6. So Richard was busy at work. His days were spent in building up his business, back-to-back phone calls, emails, etc. My days looked very different. I loved being at home with the children, and my days were full of Play-Doh, of nappies, of the goldfish, the missing hamster, the school run, bath time, story time, all the things of family life. Little by little, what happened is we began to live independent lives. It wasn't a decision we made. It was just a way of living that we drifted into. And we one day realized that we were living in parallel, and we needed to stop and reconnect. And some wise words from a friend said to us, just spend some time once a week, put it in the diary, and spend that time together, finding out and being interested in each other. And that bit of advice was key in the way that we then built our marriage. Now, there may be many of you here this morning, maybe you're not married, or maybe you're just starting out on relationships. But if you think of a relationship like a train, our feelings, if you think of them like the engine of the train, that's what pulls the relationship along. But as time goes by, things change. Our feelings become the carriage, and it's the choices we make to submit and to love each other in the everyday little decisions in life. That becomes the engine, and that pulls the relationship along. Loving our husband or wife in the way that Jesus calls us to means putting the other first by being interested in what they're interested in. Then secondly, showing love in the way that they want to receive it, not in the way that we want to receive it. Now, I know at this church you do the marriage course, and there's a concept there called the five languages of love by a guy called Gary Chapman. But basically he says there are five different ways that we show someone that we love them. The first way is by our words. Now, the Bible reminds us the tongue has the power of life or death. Affirming or encouraging words can communicate very powerfully to some people that we love them. So a compliment or an encouragement, it says, I value you, I love you, you matter to me. And if that doesn't come naturally to us, that may need to be a choice to say those encouraging and affirming words. Secondly, gifts. Now, gifts can be tokens of love and communicate strongly on an emotional level. It's not the value of the gift, but it's the thought behind it that counts. So one little flower picked from the garden, that can mean just as much as a great big bouquet. Although, I do counsel you not to purchase something like this, which some friends of ours received on Valentine's Day. Next one is time. Time spent focusing on each other without the distractions of the job, of the computer, of the TV, whatever it is, making that special focused time, being in each other's company. Then actions, that's things that we do for one another. I guess in most relationships we share jobs, but in this particular case, this is about going out of our way to do something for the other person, packing a suitcase, making sandwiches, whatever, that communicates to them that we've made the effort and that we love them. And then finally, touch, a really powerful communicator of love for some people that speaks louder than words. So five ways of showing love: words, gifts, time, actions, and touch. But the key about this is that for most of us, one or two of these ways will be most important and will be our natural way of showing love. But the problem is that we like to show love in the way that we like to receive it. So we assume that our way of showing love is the right way, and then we end up missing each other. And it doesn't seem to work. So putting each other first in this case is about taking the time to learn how our husband or wife receives love and then choosing to do that, even if it doesn't feel natural for us. And here's just a couple of examples. Well, firstly, some friends of ours bought a house in Bristol a while ago, and it needed a lot of work doing on it. He had a busy job, he would come back in the evening, and he would be doing DIY, and it was the same at weekends. And the sparkle began to go out of their marriage. They came to see us, and as they sat round the kitchen table, she said, "You know, I never see him anymore. It's just DIY all the time. All I want to do is for him to sit down with me in the sofa in the evening and put our feet up together." And he looked completely astonished. He said, "I'm only doing it for you." And actually, for her to love her, for him to love her, meant him going down to Blockbusters, getting out Sleepless in Seattle or whatever, bag of popcorn, and sitting next to her on the sofa in the evening. She didn't care if the house took years to complete. Now, my primary way of feeling loved is through words, but also through gifts. And I remember in the early years of our marriage, Richard went to Paris on a trip. And when he was away, I was thinking, "Oh, I wonder what he'll bring me. That will be nice." So I was fairly unimpressed when the gift was the shower cap from the hotel bathroom. Now, equally, I would spend ages choosing gifts for him that he wasn't very impressed with. And what we've had to learn is, whilst gifts are important to me, actually for Richard, they don't feel, that's not what how he best feels love. He feels loved by actions, but also by touch. So if he's stressed, it's no good me speaking to him. It's no good me buying him a bar of chocolate. He just wants a hug. That's what connects for him. So it can take an effort, but it's worth finding out from our husband or wife, how do you best feel loved? And then learning and choosing to do it. So that's putting each other first by being interested in each other, putting each other first by loving each other in the way that best connects. And then thirdly, putting each other first by choosing to believe the best. Now, we only need to be married, I think, a few weeks to realise there will be a gap between our expectations and our spouse's behaviour. And we have a choice as to what to put in that gap. Now, in 1 Corinthians 13, one of the translations talking about love says, "Love always believes the best." Believing the best rather than assuming the worst. When there's that gap, which are we going to do? So maybe we're waiting to go out in the evening. Maybe he's meant to have collected the babysitter and then coming home to pick us up and to go out. We've nearly killed ourselves, getting ourselves ready, getting the baby sorted. It's 8:15, no sign of him. Assuming the worst looks like this. "For goodness sake, where is he? He's rubbish at timekeeping. He never leaves work on time. He's hopeless. It would have been easy to have done it myself," etc., etc. Believing the best looks like this. "I better just call to say that we've been a bit delayed. I wonder what the problem is. Poor him. Maybe he's got stuck in traffic. Maybe the phone went just before he left." Whatever the situation is. Believing the best is about being generous in our expectations of our husband or wife when there is a gap. And there always will be a gap. It's not about avoiding difficult conversations, but it's about putting ourselves in their shoes before we jump to conclusions. There was an example of this just last week. I had been away with work and I came back and I was really looking forward to seeing Richard. I'd been away for 3 nights. He came into the kitchen, gave me a kiss, went upstairs for ages, and then disappeared in front of a cookery program on the TV. And I was getting pretty cross in the kitchen, thinking, what is he doing? I thought we'd be chatting and finding out what had gone on the last few days. And as this sort of little debate was going on in my head and I was getting more cross with him, something stopped me and I thought, do you know, I need to just deal with this. So I said to him, I'm finding this a bit hard. You know, we've been away and I thought we might have I thought the evening would look like having a chat together and you're watching MasterChef and what's going on? And he said to me, "I am really sorry." He said, "I've had a terrible day. I've got a cracking headache and I just needed a bit of time to catch up." If I had continued to assume the worst, that he thought MasterChef was better company than me, we wouldn't have been in for such a great evening. But believing the best changed things. It requires generosity of spirit from us. But we're commanded to do that in loving our husband or wife as Jesus loves us. Finding that most generous explanation and believing in it. Every relationship has a gap. It's how we respond that is key. And it will give space, if we do that, for our husband or wife to come closer to us rather than driving us apart. So is it possible to stay in love? Society tells us no, but Jesus shows us how. Submitting to one another, loving each other as he loved us, putting each other first, being interested in what each other are interested in, communicating love in the way that best connects, and believing the best. And it's easy at the beginning when we feel in love, but we're called to follow Jesus and to model the choice day in, day out, in the good times and in the bad. And I want to just bring this to an end by reading you a powerful visual picture of what it means to put the other first. And it was written by a surgeon called Richard Seltzer. He says this: I stand by the bed where a young woman lies, her face post-operative, her mouth twisted in palsy, clownish. A tiny twig of the facial nerve, the ones to the muscles of her mouth, has been severed. She will be thus from now on. The surgeon has followed with religious fervour the curve of her flesh, I promise you that. Nevertheless, to remove the tumour in her cheek, I have cut a little nerve. Her young husband is in the room, and he stands on the opposite side of the bed, and together they seem to dwell in the evening lamplight, isolated from me, private. Who are they, I ask myself, he and this wry mouth that I have made, who gaze at and touch each other so greedily? The young woman speaks. Will my mouth always be like this, she asks. Yes, it will, I say. It's because the nerve was cut. She nods and is silent. But the young man smiles. I like it, he said. It's kind of cute. And all at once, I know who he is, and I lower my gaze. One is not bold in an encounter with a god, and unmindful, I see he bends to kiss her crooked mouth. An eye so close, I can see how he twists his own lips to accommodate hers, to show the kiss still works. And I remembered that the gods appeared in ancient times as mortals, and I hold my breath and let the wonder in. As we go away from this morning, how can we do this to put each other first? The author Jack Dominion said, as Christians, we know the ways of love. We are simply forgiven sinners who are learning to extend that forgiveness and love to the person that we have chosen to spend the rest of our lives with. And God comes alongside us to help us. In the preceding verses in Ephesians, it says, be filled with the Spirit. Go on being filled with the Spirit. And he will equip us to love in the way that he calls us to put each other first. But you know, there are bigger consequences to this as we seek to live out God's will for our marriages. He gives us the opportunity to model healthy relationships to the next generation. He gives us the opportunity to model staying in love in the way that he loves us. It's a daily choice. But as we learn to stay in love, we pray that God will use us to raise a generation of people who understand love in a different way, and to impact society as people begin to ask, how is it that you have been able to stay in love? And the answer is, not through anything we have done, but because of what God has done in us and through us.